More than 700,000 people call Seattle home, with thousands more moving to the city every year to make a living and put down roots. Each of us values this land in our own unique ways, but you could ask the question, whose land is this really? And do we maybe even owe a bunch of back rent? KNKX's Ariel Van Cleve brings us this story of rethinking our real estate.
A lot of us pay rent, sometimes at an exorbitant rate. But for many of us, it's the price we're willing to pay in order to live in a place with a solid economy and gorgeous views everywhere you look. But long before we got here, the Duwamish tribe called 54,000 acres from Seattle to Bellevue and down to Renton home. They were the original caretakers, or landlords, if you will, of this land. And now that we're living and working in their ancestral land, there's a question of how responsible are we for making past wrongs right. Well, there's an opportunity for you to decide for yourself thanks to an effort to pay the tribe a little back rent. Some folks have already bought into the idea.
Oh, it makes me feel so honored that they know that there is a Duwamish tribe and they in their small way, want to pay rent.
That's Cecile Hansen. She's the chairwoman for the tribe, has been for the last 4 decades. She's a small woman with short gray hair, and as we talk to the tribe's longhouse in Soto, it becomes clear that she's incredibly energetic and blunt. So why exactly is this concept of rent even a thing? 4 words, lack of federal recognition. The Duwamish aren't seen as an official tribe in the eyes of the feds, which means there's no support coming from the government. To understand how that's possible, let's start with a little background. In 1851, the famed Denny Party appeared on the shores of Alki Beach. They were greeted by the Duwamish.
A ship showed up, and that first winter, we helped them survive.
Great! They survive and start making themselves at home, like really at home. Let's fast forward a few years to 1855. This is when the federal government made a deal with the local tribal leaders to exchange land for hunting and fishing rights, a settlement of $150,000, and land to set up reservations. Chief Seattle was the leader of the Duwamish and the first to sign the treaty. There was a problem, though, soon after the agreement was signed. You see, the white settlers who showed up here realized pretty quickly just how valuable this land was. And as the owners of the choicest slice of real estate, the Duwamish weren't allowed to set up a reservation here for themselves.
They signed an initiative that they didn't want to put a reservation over here in Black River.
Now, the Black River, that used to be around Renton and has since dried up. And as far as the they she's referring to, that's Arthur and David Denny, David Swinson Maynard, and Henry Yesler, the fathers of modern-day Seattle, and yes, some of the very same folks who received help from the Duwamish when they first arrived in the area. Hansen says after they blocked the creation of a reservation, many Duwamish were asked to move to other reservations, making it a problem to stay a cohesive tribe.
And that is why we are assimilated all over the place. But we survived, and I keep saying we're still here.
This wasn't a big issue at first, but it became one by the 1960s. And this is where the whole rent-paying reparations would later come in. The federal government made changes to how it recognized tribes. Tribes that stayed on the rolls kept their funding for things like education and healthcare. Those that were removed lost out. The Duwamish were removed. That's because under these new rules, federal recognition required being a cohesive tribe with a government. That was pretty much impossible for the Duwamish because of this move nearly 100 years before that scattered members across the region. The new rules cost them their fishing rights, too. Gaining back those protections is how Hansen got started in her role as chairwoman in the first place. It was back in the 1970s when she jumped into a battle between her brother and the Department of Fish and Wildlife.
I got involved with my brother who was fishing in the Duwamish River. That was how he'd survived and took care of his family. And the Department of Fisheries, or the people from the state, kept citing him for fishing. He said, "I'm Duwamish."
Hansen started advocating on behalf of her family and the tribe, but kept hearing no. Soon after, she was elected chairwoman. Cue 40 years of activism, still no recognition. That means no fishing rights, no money from the feds to pay for education, healthcare, upkeep at the tribe's longhouse. Meanwhile, Seattle continues to grow and thrive, while the tribe earns nothing. In the last few years, there's been an effort underway coordinated by a group of volunteers known as the Duwamish Solidarity Group to bring in more money. They created a program called Real Rent Duwamish, where you give a monthly donation. Chandra Farlow is one member of the Solidarity Group. She explained over the phone that the idea came from watching the tribe try and try again to get recognition.
The tribe going through the processes, it's not working. It's not working. So what can the people of Seattle do who aren't Duwamish or an indigenous to this land to uplift and amplify the Duwamish tribe's voice?
Now's the time to point out that Farlow is non-native. So she and the roughly 1,900 others who are paying rent to the tribe are essentially putting their money where their mouths are when it comes to finding ways to amplify Duwamish voices. The money goes toward paying the light bill at the longhouse, making sure the roof isn't leaking, paying staff. Some of it goes toward covering the costs of the annual canoe journey. Lots of tangibles that come from giving a little piece of your monthly paycheck. Plus, Farlow says, logically, she understands her actions didn't cause this problem in the first place, the need for the tribe to fight for its rights, but there's a part of her that still feels like she's on the hook for what she calls the legacy of colonial systems.
I still have to remind myself that I, as one person, I didn't create colonial systems, but I can be complicit in it and I can be actually building it by my actions daily. So even though I know I'm not responsible as one person for all these things, I am responsible for here and now.
Farlow says this need to understand her role in society, or as she puts it, the here and now, started while she was growing up a military brat living on Air Force bases in different parts of the world. When she landed in Western Washington, she started learning about the Duwamish and other indigenous tribes while studying at Evergreen State College. That's when the desire to right those past wrongs really hit home. But Farlow says she's not motivated by guilt. Instead, she wants to show respect to the people of the Duwamish Nation and the land that their people have lived on since time immemorial. She thinks of it like recognizing we're all tied together, so each of us has to take responsibility.
We're so interconnected. We're so interdependent upon everything, upon each other, upon the Earth's cycles, all these things. And it's, to me, it's about acknowledging that actively in action.
And sure, she says her action may be only barely scratching the surface of setting things right after the tribe has struggled for so many years, but it's a start. And that's been totally worth it to her.